We've covered the growing number of Americans who claim no religious affiliation, the so-called nones, repeatedly on this show. However, please don't take the fact that there is now an exhibit of religious history in the nation's capital to mean that religion in this country is now extinct. Just as importantly, please don't think this is yet another faith-driven pseudoscientific theme park like the notorious Ark Encounter in Kentucky. No, the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of American History, Religion section is an exhaustive, scientific, and invaluable look at the role of faiths, and its curator is the esteemed scholar Peter Manceau. And I'm very happy to welcome Dr. Manceau back to State of Belief Radio. Peter, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
Would you talk about why you were interested in curating the Smithsonian's religious section?
I have the privilege of being the first curator of religion at the National Museum of American History. There have certainly been curators before me who have had an interest in religion, and so I'm not starting from scratch in terms of religious objects in the Smithsonian's collection, but this is the first time that the American History Museum has had a dedicated curator of American religious history. And I'm thrilled to have this opportunity because in my writing, I've always been drawn to objects. The material culture of the past has always felt to me the most direct connection we can have to lives that are so far gone, to beliefs and practices that might seem too far distant in the past to have direct access to without something concrete to hold on to. Mm-hmm. So the ability to tell this story in a place like the Smithsonian, which not only has its own incomparable collections of millions of objects to draw upon, but also as an institution with which other institutions and communities of faith were so eager to work with to lend us significant materials for the exhibit, it was just an opportunity too good to pass up. And so it's been a thrill. These past 2 years, I've been trying to collect objects that relate to the great diversity of religious life in early America so that visitors will see some expected and stories that they may have heard about during their schooling and also some real surprises. So a blending of the known and the unknown to tell this surprising story of religion in early America was really the goal.
And, you know, Peter, I have to say that I run into a lot of people regularly who have no idea that there was diversity in the beginning of America's religions.
Well, I think when we are growing up and we learn anything, if we learn anything about America's early religious history, we learn about the Pilgrims or we might learn about the Puritans. We learn this phrase that Governor John Winthrop of the Puritans taught to history, a city upon a hill, a phrase, of course, borrowed from the New Testament that then he applies to the American experiment. Mm-hmm. It's a phrase that's used by John F. Kennedy and then most significantly by Ronald Reagan, and then Barack Obama echoed it as well. And the result of this idea that America is a city upon a hill as far as its religious history goes, I think has convinced many people that it's just one story, mm-hmm. that there's only the story of the persecution of a certain type of English Protestant that came across the Atlantic to live their faith as they saw fit. But that story overlooks the fact that we are actually many cities and many hills. Almost simultaneously in the 17th century, as the Pilgrims and the Puritans are arriving, you have a great many different communities of faith crossing the Atlantic and encountering a continent already full of a diversity of beliefs and practices. And within a generation, they're also bringing by force men and women from Africa with their own religious traditions. Mm-hmm. So from that very earliest moment of encounter of all these different cultures, religious diversity is the real story of American religious history.
Give us a quick visit through the religion section and tell our listeners what they will find in the American religion section in the museum.
The Religion in Early America exhibit covers roughly 1630 to 1830, so 200 years of early American history from both the colonial period and then the first few decades of the early republic. Within this section, we consider three factors: religious diversity, as I've mentioned, religious freedom as a direct outgrowth of that diversity, as a practical need for so many different competing and conflicting religious worldviews to create a society together, we needed to have no official religion and resulting religious liberty. And contrary to what many feared at the time, this religious liberty did not lead to the decline of religion as a cultural or moral force, but the opposite happens. We have these periods of blossomings of religious devotion known as Great Awakenings early in American history, and those three factors contribute to the very uniquely religious nation that we have today. And this is, of course, a story that we tell with objects. And so the earliest objects in the exhibit do relate to the history of the Puritans. We have the Bay Psalm Book, which is the first book published in English North America, an edition of the Psalms published in Cambridge, Massachusetts in 1640. And the fascinating thing about this object to me is not only that it's first, but also what it represents. It suggests that religion in early America had an improvised nature from the start. When the Puritans arrived and they wanted to purify their faith, they saw the need to create a new translation of the Psalms, to have new words of worship for this new land. And so they gathered a community of 30 scholars to translate the Hebrew Psalms into a metrical, a verse English. And it was a real statement of breaking new ground in this land that they called a New Jerusalem. And we put that story in context with some of the immediate religious disagreements that occurred within the society that tried to be theologically uniform. So, for example, we include an object owned by Roger Williams, who was exiled from Massachusetts for his heretical religious ideas and wanders through southern New England looking for a place to found a colony of his own, the Colony of Providence, which some point to as the real seedbed of religious freedom in this country. To tell Roger Williams' story, we actually have a sundial compass that he used to wander through the woods and find his way for this place where he would establish his own colony. So the objects in the exhibit are not only explicitly religious objects like the Bay Psalm Book, they're also very active objects like this sundial compass, which despite not being a liturgical object or anything directly related to worship, becomes very important to our earliest religious history.
You know, Peter, I'm always interested in how that history relates to some of the debates and complexity of the present. And I'd like for you, if you will, just to talk for a second about the multiplicity of religions that are involved in this and how that really does relate to where we are now.
The story of religion in early America, as many have encountered it, is largely a story of diversity among different Protestant denominations. And that is, of course, part of the story we tell as well. You have, from the very earliest days, you have the Puritans who become a congregational church. In the southern colonies, you have the Anglicans, which become the Episcopal Church. And then a variety of other Protestant denominations become part of the story as it unfolds. Roger Williams establishes the First Baptist Church in Rhode Island. The Dutch Reform are coming into New Amsterdam all around the same time. The Quakers, driven out of Massachusetts, established themselves in Pennsylvania. But the bigger story is that it's not simply a matter of these Protestant denominations vying for places to have their individual colonies and eventually competing for members in their churches. From the early part of the middle of the 17th century, there's also a Catholic population who arrives in Maryland in the 1630s. And not too much later, the first organized Jewish community arrives in New Amsterdam, later New York. And all the while, we do have, as a really forgotten part of our history, the forced importation of African beliefs and practices, which include perhaps a dozen regional religious systems from West Africa, as well as Islam. The presence of Islam in early America will likely be the most surprising thing to many people who visit the exhibit or read the book, but it's among scholars and historians, it's a non-controversial fact of our history that perhaps 15-20% of the enslaved men and women brought to America had some connection to Islam when they arrived. All of these transplanted traditions are negotiating with a world where there's already a diversity of beliefs and practices here in Native America. There was not simply just one Native American way of being religious. There's a whole continent full of beliefs and practices which differ by region and by language group and by experience. So that's really the story, the intersection of all those beliefs and practices that on the surface don't seem to have much to do with each other, but then through their interaction change each other dramatically. Mm-hmm. The story is not simply Christianity coming in and suppressing all these other faiths, that it is certainly part of it, but both the majority faith and the minority faith are changed in the process.
The past decade has seen a great deal of revisionist history, particularly when it comes to the role of religion. So how do you navigate those waters?
That's really the power of working with objects. Working with objects is significantly different and I think more immediate than making a written argument. Mm-hmm. A written argument often cannot persuade those who believe in a counter-narrative, who may have be invested in these revisionist histories to which you're referring. But the documents and objects themselves in the exhibit, they really do speak for themselves, and they are undeniable. I mentioned that the presence of Islam in early America, both in the exhibit and the book, will seem controversial to some, but to scholars, it is taken as a fact. In the exhibit, we have a 13-page Arabic document written by an enslaved Muslim in Georgia early in the 19th century. It includes some basic information about the practice of Islam. It was written as an attempt by this enslaved man to pass his faith along despite the circumstances. And so there's really no refuting an object like this. There's no denying the presence of Islam in early America when you're faced with this. And the same is true with objects from other traditions that are in the exhibit. They tell a story themselves. Objects have a wonderful way of acting as almost like photographs, a freeze frame of a moment in time. And the object I'm thinking about just now as I say that is a Torah scroll with a history bound up in the American Revolution. There was a small but vibrant Jewish community at the time of the Revolution, and during the British occupation of Manhattan in 1776, Hessian soldiers occupied the sanctuary of a synagogue, Sheareth Israel, in Manhattan, and at one point set it on fire and damaged this Torah scroll. In the exhibit, as well as in the book, you can see the burn marks in this scroll that was saved, and that tells a great deal about the history of a minority religious community, about their presence and their resilience and their desire to be part of the American experiment at the time of the nation's founding. Faced with objects, one often needs to confront assumptions about history, including the alternate histories that they may have learned.
Why is it important to study the role of religion in the nation's history?
Well, it's important to remember that these questions that we face today about religious diversity, they've always been part of the American question, what kind of nation do we want to be? Who gets to call themselves Americans? And so to confront our past and to see that our forebears have also dealt with these questions and not dealt with them perfectly, the establishment of religious freedom was not inevitable. It was not immediate. Even when the First Amendment guaranteed religious freedom at the federal level, established churches continued to exist at the state level. And it was only a matter of decades for those to be repealed. And so the notion that wrestling with questions of religious freedom and religious diversity is a real part of this American experiment, I think, is important to remember now as we're faced with these current questions, which seem so intractable, and yet when we look back at them, we'll see them as part of an ongoing story, this work in progress of trying to get religious freedom right.
When a person comes to this museum, what do you want that person to experience in the religion section at the Smithsonian National Museum of American History to take with them when they go?
Most people who come to an exhibit like this, I think, will come in looking for themselves. They'll want to know if their religious identity, their community, is represented. And many people, most people, I think, will find that when they come looking, whether they're seeing George Washington's Anglican christening robe or a bell that Paul Revere made for a congregational church, or the Torah scroll I mentioned, or that Arabic document, or an object we didn't mention, Thomas Jefferson's somewhat heretical edition of the Bible in which he edited with a razor blade. There's a lot for people to identify with and to see themselves in their own religious perspective within the exhibit. But the real power is seeing that all of these are part of the same American story. No matter how different each worldview is suggested by the objects, they're all part of the same story. And so I like to think that they will inspire conversations between those who find themselves in the exhibit space, and it will lead to greater understanding.
Dr. Peter Manso is curator of the Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of American History Religion section in Washington, D.C. You'll get an in-depth look at this important exhibit in Dr. Manso's new book, Objects of Devotion, Religion in Early America. Peter's other books include One Nation Under Gods, A New American History. Peter, it's always great to talk with you. I'm so glad that it's you that has this immensely important position at the Smithsonian. Thanks also for being with us once again on State of Belief Radio.
My genuine pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.